Do you ever know somebody who was lying? And because you knew that they were lying, the lie just really didn't make sense. Like, maybe the lie could have made sense if you didn't already know. But since you knew it was a lie. How about someone who was just so terrible at lying and made up the most ridiculous story that made absolutely zero sense that you knew they were lying regardless of the other indicating factors? Like, you had no idea beforehand they were lying, but the story just didn't add up enough. That's what happened over the weekend in Congress with Congressman Jamal Bowman. All about that and more today on The Michael Wilson Show.
From the American Beacon Studios, this is The Michael Wilson Show.
So I think we can say that we all have known kids, maybe even we were some of those kids, who saw the red thing on the wall next to the door and thought it would be funny to pull it and see what happened, right? Set off the fire alarm as a kid. What we don't see quite as often is full-grown adults choosing to just pull the fire alarm. Over the weekend, it seemed that a government shutdown was fully imminent. And just before it seemed to shut down, just before it was supposed to shut down, everyone basically agreed to pass a spending bill that would keep the government open, as it were, for another 45 days. Right before that vote, the Democrats wanted to delay it. And when they couldn't, Jamal Bowman proceeded to pull the fire alarm. He walked toward a locked door and pulled the fire alarm on the wall. There were signs surrounding the door saying that it was a fire exit only, and the only way the door would unlock would be if the fire alarm was pulled. Jamal Bowman pulled that fire alarm on the wall. It was just your average, everyday-looking fire alarm. It wasn't something special that said door unlock on it. It was your average, everyday, normal fire alarm. And as a middle school principal especially, he should definitely know what a fire alarm is. Well, he just released this statement regarding the events. He said, "I want to personally clear up confusion surrounding today's events. Today, as I was rushing to make a vote, I came to a door that is usually open for votes, but today would not open." Pause. So basically the reason for that is, as everyone knows, so he was in the Cannon Building, which is connected to the Capitol. There's tunnels that go underground, which even I know about, and I visited those tunnels when I was 6 years old. So everyone knows about the tunnels that go under. There's also a door on the first floor before you get to the basement with the tunnels that is always open. But he went to the door that pretty much every single person who visits the Capitol knows is only open on weekdays. On weekends, that door becomes a fire exit only. So the statement already, just, you can tell this is just made up. But let's continue. "I am embarrassed to admit that I activated the fire alarm, mistakenly thinking it would open the door. I regret this and sincerely apologize for any confusion this caused." So first, before we continue, because there's more to this statement and we'll get into it, his lie automatically is just admission of stupidity. Assuming right from the start that we just believe what he said, if we take it at face value and say, no, he's not allowed to lie, he would never lie, assuming we believe him, automatically he has admitted that he is incredibly incompetent. Too incompetent, I would argue, to be a sitting representative. Seriously, he said, he basically said, I was rushed, I saw a door that I've used before with a ton of signage saying don't open, and I pulled a fire alarm thinking that somehow that was the door opener. My son is 1 year old. He cannot read. And I would honestly believe that he has more common sense than this representative. But he continues, it doesn't end there. He says, "But I want to be very clear. This was not me in any way trying to delay any vote. It was the exact opposite. I was trying urgently to get to a vote, which I ultimately did, and joined my colleagues in a bipartisan effort to keep our government open. I also met after the vote with Sergeant at Arms and the Capitol Police at their request and explained what had happened. My hope is that no one will make more of this than it was. I am working hard every day, including today, to do my job, to do it well, and deliver for my constituents. Peace and love, Jamal Bowman." So I'll start off by saying there's literally only three options for outcomes here. There's only three. The first is that Jamal Bowman thought it would be funny to pull a fire alarm. And that, point blank, that's the first option of these three, is that he just thought it would be funny or disturbing or whatever, but he thought it would be entertaining, I will say, for him to pull the fire alarm, so he did. That's the first option. The second option is that he really can't read, or even if there was no signage, he can't form basic human understanding on the most mundane, easy to understand things. That's the second option. The third and the last option is that he was trying to delay the vote by pulling the fire alarm in the Cannon building. So I think we can automatically rule out the first option. I don't think anyone, including him, is trying to say that he thought it would be funny, so he did it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I don't see any scenario where that's what happened. So I think we can rule out the first option. I don't think he was doing this to be funny or as a prank. So I think the only two options left are that he's stupid or a criminal. Those are the only two options there. If it is the first, I think he should be thrown out, removed from his position for basically lacking the ability to understand signs and have common sense. I mean, even without the signs, if the door's locked and there's a, you know, it's a fire exit and you pull the fire alarm, even if the door was locked and there were no signs at all, for someone to come to the conclusion that the solution to that, rather than go to the other set of doors, you know, is one floor down the stairs, or to use the tunnels that pretty much everyone uses to get from building to building. If your decision is to pull a fire alarm thinking that it would unlock a locked door, automatically you are too incompetent to be a sitting representative. He should be thrown out just for lacking common sense. If it is purposeful delay, he should face the same, or I would argue worse, consequences than everyone on January 6th did. So the people that are getting 25, 30 years, they were just everyday people who, some of which, I mean, we could argue that some of them were trying to interrupt Congress and stop it. I would say that the large majority of people who've been prosecuted were just in the Capitol building. They just were there. So these people are getting 25, 30 years for moving a fence and walking in. But Jamal Bowman purposely threw a fire alarm to try to delay a vote that he didn't like. That's infinitely worse. I mean, indeed, there's no way around it. On every front, not only is he not just an individual, he is held to a higher standard being an elected official that helps run our country. So automatically, it's worse because of the position that he's in. But he also wasn't just entering somewhere he wasn't supposed to enter. He didn't walk into like Marjorie Taylor Greene's office without permission. He threw a fire alarm, which would be a crime if it wasn't trying to cause any delay. So if it was to try to cause delay, yeah, he should definitely be sentenced to at least like 40, 50 years. Okay, now we got to play this video because this is from AOC, and we all love her, right? And like we all know that AOC is the shining vestige of intelligence in the community of DC. But let's watch this video and see if we still believe that. Let's watch.
There was an interesting moment over the weekend when your New York colleague, Congressman Jamal Bowman, and he's under investigation for this now after Capitol Police say he pulled a fire alarm in one of the House office buildings. Democrats were trying to delay a vote, a final vote on the bill. There he is pulling the fire alarm. He says it was an accident. He thought pulling the alarm would open a door based on the fact that the doors to his right there were locked. And there was a sign that he said it was confusing. I'll be honest, it doesn't really make sense to me, his explanation. Have you talked to him? What's going on
there? I mean, listen, I think if you actually do see some of the photos of the signs, I think there's something to be said about the government's about to shut down. There's a vote clock that's going down. The exits that are normally open in that building were suddenly closed.
So you pulled a fire alarm?
So what I am here to say is that House Administration and U.S. Capitol Police and Jamal Bowman are an active, and he's fully participating in saying there was a misunderstanding. But what I do think is important to raise is the fact that Republicans, representatives like Nicole Malliotakis and others, immediately moved to file motions to censure, motions to expel, before there has even been conversations that are finished to even see if there was a misunderstanding here.
So before we actually dive into what AOC just said, I would like to point out that it is bad news for you if CNN is saying that what you're saying doesn't make sense. If you are a Democrat who they would regularly support, and CNN has the gall to say that what you're saying is stupid, buddy, you're in very hot water. I mean, there's no way around that. If CNN is even being like, no, I don't really think this, they cover up anything. They'll cover up murder for you. But if there's a situation where you've done something so ridiculous that even CNN can't cover it, yeah, you're in a very, very bad position. Now let's talk a little bit about AOC here, because first of all, Shed, the exits you would normally use are closed. It's not exits, it's a singular exit. She tries to make it sound like, well, he didn't know what to do because the exits he would try. No. He went to one door. And when it said locked, fire exit only, he pulled the fire alarm. I'm sorry. Even CNN realizes that there's not really a defense for that. And that's all the confirmation that we really need here. AOC's trying to say that it's just a big misunderstanding, that he's cooperating with Capitol Police. What else is he going to do? Not cooperate with Capitol Police? Like, that's the alternative? Is he's just going to not cooperate? Of course he's going to cooperate. But that doesn't make it a misunderstanding at all. No matter what lies he tries to tell, I think that everyone can tell, even CNN can tell. The used-to-be bartender, now-turned socialist, is lecturing you, expecting you to believe that her buddy somehow misunderstood and accidentally triggered a fire alarm. So AOC basically, this is just the irony here, AOC believes that we are all as stupid and ignorant as they are pretending that Jamal Bowman is. Because in order to believe that this was all just some misunderstanding, we would have to be as stupid as someone who misunderstood a fire exit and pulled a fire alarm to unlock a door. The double standards here are insane. If anyone from January 6th said moving the fence or walking in was just a big misunderstanding, they didn't really know they weren't supposed to enter, they'd like them to receive capital punishment or like life in prison. But for a Democrat, oh, it's fine. It's true. He just didn't really understand. He didn't know. Who could have, you know what? Put yourself in his shoes. Would you have known, really, if you were trying to get to a vote urgently and you just had to get to that vote and you were going to be late and the only possible door in the entire building that you could possibly use was locked, wouldn't you pull a fire alarm? No, AOC, I don't think anyone would do that. And if, hang on, this is the real kicker of her entire defense here. If AOC, if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you are of the mind that would do this, that offers understanding, I think that that speaks infinitely more of you than anyone else. Truly. Because I've met a lot of people in my life. A lot of people I heavily disagree with. I've lost friendships with people that I disagree with over those disagreements. We've had some pretty serious ones. And I honestly can say that not a single one of them would misunderstand a locked fire exit and pull a fire alarm in urgency for a vote to try to unlock the door. Oh, and the best part is, you know what else we know? Because it's on video. He didn't try to use that door. He pulled the fire alarm, and then he walked away to get to the building. So if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, this is a load of baloney. Yes. Yes, it is. There's no two ways around it. And as I've said, even CNN acknowledges it. Now, why AOC is defending this, I couldn't tell you. It makes her look more stupid than anything. She could easily say, yeah, I don't really know, and leave it at that. Even if she didn't want to harass the guy, even if she didn't want to be, you know, in opposition to Jamal, she could have just sat there and been like, yeah, I don't know. I don't have all the facts here. I don't know. Instead, what she's trying to say is, well, it could be a misunderstanding. And as I've said, if you truly believe that this could be a misunderstanding, then I'll group you in the group of people that should not be in Congress. Point blank. All right, there's a video making the rounds that shows a transgender beating up a girl in middle school. For reference, just so we're clear, because I like to be clear on my show, apart from delusional anti-reality, this is a boy beating up a girl. All right, let's watch this video. So you notice at the end there that she walks up after she's been beaten on the floor, like her head thrown around onto the floor and then punched. And then the trans student says something that I really can't understand. I only understood one word and I bleeped it out. So what you notice is that at the end, she gets up saying she can't breathe And she walks over to, I would assume it's her friend, because, you know, she's standing there walking up to this person, talking to them. Sweetheart, that's not your friend. That person was recording before the fight started. They didn't start recording like in a middle school fight where you see, like, you get the video of the circle already being there and them, you know, hitting each other. This person was recording the student walking up and grabbing her by the back of the head. So this person is not your friend. You should disown them and never speak to them again. Also, if this was my daughter, oh, buddy, words would be had. Probably a lot more than words. I can't say more than that because this is technically a middle school student, so they're like, what, 12? But, you know, as a father, some things would go down. But this is what we come to expect from the transgender community, isn't it? It's worth noting that the school says they can't verify if this guy was trans because of federal law that prohibits them from discussing students' gender identity. But if you need the school to confirm it, then your eyesight just isn't working. This student is a boy, we know that much, who's wearing an open jacket with like a sports bra and long hair, trying to talk in kind of a higher pitched voice. If that's not trans, then I don't think the trans community can define what trans is. Undebatably, this kid is identifying as a transgender, or maybe non-binary. Either way, same community, same delusional community that creates monsters like this. This same student has allegedly, by the way, attacked other girls, that this isn't just a singular instance. Some are defending this, by the way, just so you know, some people are defending this, saying, well, maybe the girl was very transphobic and bigoted and deserved what she had coming to her. First of all, I don't think there's an instance where an 11 or 12-year-old girl deserves to be thrown around by a boy on the floor. I think that there are 2 billion solutions before that one, and that one is immoral in all cases. That even if there is punishment to be had, it does not come at the behest of a boy her age. That's just factual. Also, being transphobic isn't wrong. It just means that you don't participate in delusions. I mean, if that's the definition that I'm a transphobe, and I've never been attacked in a school hallway. Wait, I was homeschooled. That was never going to happen. Even if she was transphobic, the event was clearly premeditated. As the attacker targeted her, it wasn't like, you know, just a random person, you know. Even if she was being transphobic, this boy knew she was transphobic and walked up behind a girl, grabbed her by the hair, and threw her on the floor. And proceeded to beat her to the point where she couldn't breathe. This plays into a larger discussion that we need to have, and it features 2 major points. So, for starters, transgenderism is a mental illness. I mean, there's no, you know, way around that. I mean, even the left says that it's a mental illness, and the way that we treat a mental illness is by giving them gender-affirming surgery, right? So, everyone can admit that transgenderism is a mental illness. It is a disease of the mind. This degeneracy affects the rest of them, their person, causing them to act out like this. This boy is clearly unwell, and I'd wager my salary that it's definitely attributable to the transgenderism, or at least coincides with that transgenderism. I don't think it's coincidence that when we see this, like we saw from Virginia, where the boy assaulted the girl in the bathroom, I don't think it's coincidental that the same people that are struggling with such a serious mental illness as questioning what God made you, the very basic fundamentals of human biology, that those same people are also psychopathic and attack girls at random. Or actually, clearly not at random, considering it was targeted, evidently. The second big point here is that boys and girls are not the same. I have said this a million times. Anyone with a functioning brain can understand it. Boys and girls are not the same. Boys are faster, stronger, more resilient, have more endurance than girls. When you put a girl and a boy in a fight against each other, this will happen every single time. Apart from if you put like a 12-year-old boy who's mildly obese and has never worked out a day in his life against some, you know, national jiu-jitsu female champion. That's one of the only scenarios where a girl will ever have any say in a fight. But if you put the same aged boy and the same aged girl in a hallway and say, go at it, you're going to get the same solution every single time, and it's going to be that the girl can't breathe, because that's just how it works. This is the same reason why it's so important to keep males out of female sports, not just in middle school, not just in high school, not just in college, professionally, in every single arena. Boys should never compete against girls in anything that requires physicality. I would say they shouldn't even compete in things that require mental strength either, not because girls are stupider than guys, but because in you know, mental sports, like poker or chess, just take a look sometime. I don't need to give you the statistics here, but just take a look sometime at the chart of like the top 100 performing poker players or chess players and tell me how many are female. Yeah, exactly. You'll see mediocre males winning female championships without even trying that hard, because you take the gender that God specifically designed to be the strong protectors and you put them against the gender that God designed to be meek and stay at home and nurture. And then people are like, well, this could have gone any other. No, it couldn't have gone any other way. You absolute moron. This is the only way it could have gone, because God designed him to protect her and for her to be protected by him. And so when he turns on, inevitably, when he turns, and rather than be a protector, be an antagonist, be the thing that needs protecting from, this is what will happen. Now, I'm enraged that nobody did anything, right? Like, I wasn't public schooled. I wasn't. Praise God. But had I been, and there, let me tell you, in high school, there were days where I wish I was, because I saw stuff like this when I was in high school. And you know what my thought immediately was? Because I trained in martial arts for about a decade. And my thought every single time I saw a video like this was, oh man, I wish I'd been in that hallway. That truly, that's not just from a father perspective. That was from a peer level perspective. I wanted to be public schooled on days, not because I cared to be public schooled, not for academic reasons, not for social reasons, because I got all the academics and social time that I needed. There were days I wanted to be public schooled because I wanted to deal with bullies like this. And this was before they were transgender. This was back when it was just, you know, a big guy and a smaller guy. If you put me in a hallway at 17 with a boy doing this to a girl, a delusional guy doing this to a girl, no, absolutely not. And it almost enrages me. And it enraged me back then. It enrages me just as much now that not a single person in that hallway stood up and did anything. Now, you could make the argument, well, that's because they would be prosecuted. They know this kid is trans, and they know that if they do anything, they're the ones in trouble for it. I wouldn't have cared. I'm sorry. Any 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, or 18-year-old boy who was raised correctly, which I guess precludes them from being public schooled, because 99% of the people that public school their kids also don't raise them correctly, but had they been raised correctly, would not care about the consequences of doing the right thing. I wouldn't have. My decisions are not based on rules. Well, the rules of God, but not the rules of a school, not the unspoken rules of who you can and can't hurt, who you can and can't defend against. No. This leads into the huge discussion about what parents need to do. Not just kids, because of course, as a kid should have stood up there. But they didn't. As a parent, if you are still allowing your kids to be in public school, you get one of three scenarios. Either your kid gets attacked like this in the hallway, your kid is doing the attacking like this in the hallway, or your kid isn't standing up and is just lucky enough not to be one of those two people. Those are the only three options. There's literally no good outcome. They are either being attacked maliciously, attacking maliciously, or they don't have the gall to stand up against malicious attackers, and they're just lucky enough not to have been influenced to be one of those two groups. Those are the only three options. So if you love your kids, I'm sorry, there's no two ways around it. They should not be in public school. Ignoring the academics, because we've had that discussion on the show a million times, you can Google it. It is open on the internet for everyone to see. The academic quality, the social quality, the maturity, the capability, the success levels of homeschoolers. Ignoring all of that, this video alone should convince you as a parent that if you are not already homeschooling your kids, that you should literally start today, middle of the school year, pull them out, be done. Because this is what is happening in public school. So be done with it. All right. Dianne Feinstein, you might know her as the person who didn't vote anymore, even though she was elected to vote. She has passed away at the age of 90. There's a lot of conservatives that are celebrating her death and making jokes about it. I'm not on board with that. I mean, I don't mind a little dark humor here and there, but I don't know. I just don't feel great about making fun of a 90-year-old lady who died. It just doesn't feel right. There are plenty of dark jokes I've enjoyed. This just isn't one of them. I just don't see the point here. Making fun of a 90-year-old lady who died. I don't see the point. I understand that she did a lot of bad stuff, but celebrating her death, I mean, here, let me put it this way. Even if I was on board with the moral aspect of celebrating her death, which I'm not, even if I were, what are we celebrating exactly? Well, good. The bad lady's out. Yeah, but who's in? Yeah, just let that sink in. It's someone worse. She's representing California, and she may be bad, but there's always someone worse. And I guarantee you, whoever Newsom selects is going to be worse. From what I understand, it's not official yet, but it's supposed to be this black lady who's worse. So even if the moral aspect of celebrating was fine, what are we celebrating? Yeah, the bad woman's out and the worse woman's coming in to replace her. Fantastic. I'm also not in the boat with everyone who says that we need to get all the old people out of office. I think that we need to find a balance because there's a lot of conservatives that are like, this is a geriatric society. All these old people need to quit running. We only need people like, you know, Yang and Vivek and only that age and younger to be in office at this point. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have any young people in office, but on the one hand, old people typically per capita, I would say, of the same group of people, old people have more wisdom and experience than younger people. This is clearly shown to not always be true, and we can look at a handful of examples for that, you know, Feinstein, Biden, etc. But the basic truth of the fact that old people have more experience and wisdom is true. You know who I'm going to go to if I want advice? If I want real advice for what, and I'll tell you, this is, you know, who do I go to if I want advice on how I'm going to do my show or what I'm going to talk about or what I'm going to say or what I'm going to believe? Who do I go to for advice on my decisions? You think, obviously it's my wife, but apart from my wife, who am I going to go to? You think it's going to be people my age? No. I might go to one of them if I feel like it. 99.9% of the time, I'm going to go to my dad. I'm going to go to the guy that helps me run the show. I'm going to go to people I know in my church that are twice my age because they have more wisdom and experience from a life lived. They've learned a lot more things than I have. That does not mean that I hate young people. I'm literally running a show where I give my wisdom and experience. So clearly I'm not being down on young people. I think that young people have a fantastic opportunity and we should take every opportunity that we can get. But I also think that there's a difference between saying that I'm good with young people and saying that I think we need to oust all the old people. Now, disclaimer, I will say there's a difference between having aged men leading our country that are filled with wisdom and experience and letting people run our country who can't read, who can't stay awake, and who can't even tell which way to go when they exit a stage. Or people who get told by their staff what to do. Dianne Feinstein. She couldn't even vote anymore. Literally, there's videos of her sitting in there for a vote, and her staff is like, say aye. She go, aye. She didn't even know what was going on anymore. So clearly there's a difference between like, oh yeah, I'm good with wisdom and experience from old age, and let's let someone who literally is not voting anymore still vote. So Dianne Feinstein should have been removed, not necessarily because of her age, but because of how she functioned. Jamal Bowman is a good example of this. I don't want him removed because, you know, he's old. I want him removed because he either can't read or he tried to delay a vote. If someone is knocking on death's door and no longer knows what's going on around them, allowing them to make crucial decisions that impact hundreds of millions of people is just absolutely preposterous. I don't need to elect a bunch of young people, but I do need to get the old people out that can't function anymore. Joe Biden, Mitch McConnell, Dianne Feinstein, others to continue in these positions just doesn't make any sense. It's not only unfair to the American people, it's unfair to them. These people should be at home, surrounded by family, reminiscing on their lives. They're old. This is what you do in old age. They should be done passing the torch, not just to those younger, but those more capable. Instead, they're out working until their bodies literally cannot work anymore. All right, if all of this stuff has gotten you down, have a solution. The good news of the day, which is the Sixth Court of Appeals upheld the Tennessee and Kentucky decision to ban transgender minors. So if y'all remember back to what the Daily Wire, specifically Matt Walsh, by the way, big, big props to Matt Walsh, did in Tennessee, you'll remember they pushed harder than anyone else to make sure that kids were not being mutilated in their state, that they were not given irreversible drugs that would have ruined their lives. So after the state did pass that law to preventing this stuff on kids, and Kentucky, you know, did the same thing, then the ACLU went to bat and took the law to court, saying it was unconstitutional or whatever. Initially, a judge temporarily blocked the law. They said, no, this can't stand. We need a full trial until that trial could be held to confirm the validity of said law. But the ruling was better than we could have possibly imagined, and I never expected a ruling like this. It didn't just uphold the original law, but it set a ton a federal precedent that will impact this fight that we have for decades to come. So here's some of what it did. Let's go over this. It established that voters have the right to ban medical procedures they believe are immoral or dangerous, regardless of what the science community at large says. So this will not only impact the transgender community on the gender stuff on kids, but more than likely it can impact it on adults as well. It can also prevent what we see in Canada, you know, with the MAID stuff where they're doing basically assisted suicide on old people, people with, you know, life, you know, nearing death's door. They can just kill them off. This decision allows, if the voters so believe, to outlaw all of that. Regardless of science, if the voters at large want this, they want to ban it, it's banned. That's what the court said. The court also proved there's good reason to believe these procedures, as well as hormones and puberty blockers, are indeed dangerous. The court went so far as to add that the organization primarily in charge of trans health care said that we shouldn't use this stuff on minors until about the year 2000. And even now, that same organization says there's limited data supporting the use of it on minors. So the court set the precedent that it wasn't even, you know, useful, that it was dangerous. The ACLU fought and claimed that the trans community is politically powerless and that they're being unfairly treated. The court pointed out that when the federal government, medical community, and law firms are all basically entirely on your side, you cannot be considered marginalized. So it outlawed the use of calling them a marginalized community. Fantastic stuff. The ACLU also claimed that transgenderism is as immutable as the color of your skin, that you cannot change it, that it is a part of you. Thus trying to make it, you know, a protected class, like that you get civil rights. The court observed that if even the definition of transgenderism is constantly changing, that if we can't even really define what transgender is, it's thus not immutable, meaning transgenders are not a protected class and they get no special treatment whatsoever under any civil rights act. The court also made the distinction that parental rights are not absolute. They said that you can't just cut off your children's genitals just because you buy into it, that parental rights have a limit. You can't just abuse your kids nonstop because you're the parent. That you can, yes, parents have the right to decide what is best for their kids in certain areas, but there is a line to that. And when parents are abusing their children, it is the law's duty to step in and to prevent that. Now, you might be thinking that a lot of this is common sense, and you'd be right, but not a single court up to this point has taken such a grand stance against these ridiculous assertions. Not one court. This court has single-handedly provided possibly the best offense against the transgender nonsense through several key precedents that will define this fight moving forward. So this is the best news that we've seen in quite a while, and I'm not saying that lightly. Truly, the precedents that this court set are culture-changing, right? They basically just set up the sword we need to win this fight. Sure, there's states where we're not going to win it. California, you know, New York. We're not going to do it there. But through this precedent, and this is really ironic, right? Because the law would have just stood as it was and nothing would have happened except for in Tennessee and Kentucky. But because the ACLU decided to make it a fight in court, in federal court, mind you, this isn't just, you know, Tennessee precedent. This was a federal court of appeals that just set this precedent through trial. Because of this, the ACLU just went and took their position and made it from bad for them to incredibly damaging for them. They just made it so that federally, the transgender community is not a protected class. They're not marginalized. They don't have special rights. They don't qualify for civil rights. Parents don't have the absolute right to trans their kids. Transgenderism is dangerous for kids. These precedents are huge. Not only that, but because of what this court did, the only alternative that the ACLU has now is to take it higher up the food chain. And I'm telling you, if they do that, this will not stop until the Supreme Court. And you want to know what the Supreme Court's going to do when they see this precedent already set by a federal court? You want to know? They're going to concur. And then it goes, not just from being a federal court decision, but a Supreme Court decision. And you want to know something? Even the really, really bad Supreme Court decisions, like Obergefell, right, with the gay stuff, or with Roe v. Wade, with the child murder stuff, even in those really bad cases, like even people on the left who are studied lawyers and judges knew that Roe v. Wade was incredibly bad, that even if you concur with abortion, even if you say that it's totally valid, that that case just wasn't good, that this whole concept of viability just doesn't make any scientific sense, that the whole case was rubbish. Even that took 5 decades to overturn. So if the ACLU pushes this up the ladder, it goes from being a federal appeal court to being the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court in a million years is not going to rule against this precedent. They're going to rule with it, and then we're guaranteed a Supreme Court win that sets us up to win overall. So a lot of people haven't been talking about it, or they've kind of brushed it aside. You know, Jamal Bowman, this, that. This is literally the key piece of news we've needed for years. I'm not even exaggerating. This is huge. So we need to give a big thank you to people like Matt Walsh, to the governor of Tennessee, to the men and women who fought for this, because this is literally probably the best good news I've ever had on my show. I can't say it any stronger. I'm not exaggerating at all. This piece of news is huge for us. Because for years, the transgender community has done whatever they want. They believe that they have civil rights protections. They've just been waiting for a chance to prove it in court. They can do whatever they want, trans the kids, yada, 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 yada. Now they cannot do that. There is now federal precedent in court through trial that they do not have the right to do that. That laws can prevent it because it is dangerous. They're not a protected class. They are certainly not marginalized, and they don't have unlimited rights. So, yeah, there's a lot of bad news in the world. But this good news, I would say, just overpowers all of it, because one of the biggest cultural things we're facing right now is the transgender community. This preposterous ideology that infects everything, that has infected our culture, that has promoted a level of degeneracy which America has never seen before in its entire history. And we now have the sword and shield to fight as Spartans against it. And if that's not good news, well, then I don't know what is. So I'll see you guys next time. And until then, goodbye.